Blog Talk Radio.
Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hello, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as StarsCast on the internet, probably both names. I've been on the internet since the 90s. Oh, my God, I hate to say that. Oh, yes, I was a little teenager. No, not really. But anyways, lots of experience on the internet, and I've seen so many changes. Sometimes I think the changes are not all that good for all of us. But anyways, we have a beautiful guest today. Her and I, we're already smiling at each other, even though we can't see each other. But first of all, I want to let everybody know that MysticLivingToday.com celebrated its 25th year in January, and that's really hard to believe. That's a long time, and I tell people when I first started, I had to beg for stuff to put in it. Please send me something. Do a little story. Send me a poem, whatever, you know. And then, you know, as time went on, maybe it was like 10 years down the road, I had some people contact me. I'd like to write for your magazine and all that. And here we are today, and I don't solicit any material. I don't have to. And that's beautiful because I'm bringing all the beautiful work of everybody, all the authors and the poets and the artists to the world where you might not even know who they are. But by having them on my radio show and putting them in the magazine, we also have a flip version that we started in January. And what that means is the pages actually turn. And then I do the text version, and I did it this month. The first month I put some in, we were so exhausted. I have a gal who helps me with the flip. It was a big job. And then now we got it down to a science, and so I put everybody in the text version. And the reason I do that is so that my gal, who lives in Kenya, believe it or not, can take each article, poem, whatever's in there, review, and she puts it on my Instagram, and then I can send it off to all the authors. So that's the way we promote it. Otherwise, you can't do the flip. You can do the flip magazine, but you can't really do every individual page. It makes it a little bit more difficult. But it's beautiful. So go to MysticLivingToday.com, and I don't know. I'm pretty sure most of the years are there. You can scroll back to whatever. But every issue is bigger and bigger, and I'm really kind of proud of it. Then I want to talk to you about my other site. And I'm not going to say too much because I want to bring my guest in. I have lots of things to talk to her about. StarsPsychics.com, your future awaits. And I'm really proud to say that it is a registered trademark now. It took 2 years to get it. And what an ordeal. You can say TM after the name of your site, but it's not registered. Anybody can do that. I mean, there's no law or anything. But if you do an R after it, you better be registered or they're going to come after you. And what that means is it protects anything stars, star psychics, stars readings on the internet. I have some people that I've done some searches, but I'm not going to bother with them. Yeah, they are using stars, like even after their name, and I can have them take it off. But, you know, why bother? I'm not out to hurt anybody, and I'm not, you know, all they're going to do is ride along my coattails and bring us up, and we'll help them, and that's what it's about after all. It's not, I mean, if I was really, you know, like Nike or something like that, then I'd say, yeah, okay, but I'm not going to do that. There's quite a few, And actually, it's kind of an honor to have that. But anyways, right now we are in the process of adding telephone readings. I haven't heard from my webmaster today, but I think the developer is done with our interface, and it does work because Tony and I tested it. And then we'll be good to go with that. And I have lots of readers that are waiting to do that. They're all on the site right now. And so, you know, some of them don't do chat. They'll only do phone. So, but that's okay. You know, it just gives it a little more diversity. And we can, you know, maybe we'll bring in different kinds of people that really want to talk to somebody rather than chat in the chat room with them. All readings are $1.99 a minute. Those are the chat. Now, when we do the phone readings, we're going to, I think I'm going to have them start at $2.99. But that will be an introductory offer. And that will be on the site. You'll see. Because, you know, talking to somebody on the phone is a little bit different. You're really taking their energy. Typing is a little easier than talking. Like, say you wanted to talk to me. I mean, sometimes at the end, I mean, I probably couldn't do too many of them because my voice would get so raspy, and there's nothing wrong with my throat. I mean, it just is what it is. I'm just this raspy little Natalie. But anyways, I love to talk, and so sometimes, you know, you go on and on and on. So that's what's going on with that. Now, without further ado, I love that little saying. I'm going to bring in my guest. My goodness, she has written so many books. She was in Thailand. I'm going to let her talk all about how she began. And let me bring in my guest today. It's Dina Miriam. How are you today, Dina?
Hi, Natalie. It's great to be here.
You see, everybody, she talks just like I am. You can hear her voice. I can hear her voice is similar to mine, except mine is probably getting a little husky because I was on the phone a lot yesterday and all that. But anyways, okay. What I want to know, and usually, Dina, what I do is I ask everybody when they come on the show, how did they begin? How did they start on their path? Not just writing, but part of it is your beliefs. I know over 40 years, but nonetheless, you started somewhere, someplace. How did you begin?
Well, okay, we'll limit it to this life. In this life, when I got to college, I started searching. It was a wonderful time in America, and, you know, there was an influx of interest in the East. The philosophy of the East was really Allen Ginsberg and then Richard Alpert, who became Baba Ramdas. So there was a lot of, searching energy around. And I was at college. Ramdas had come back from India, was giving a talk in Cambridge, where I was, and Cambridge, Massachusetts, outside of Boston, and I went to hear him. And he had just written a book, Be Here Now, and I was completely taken with his talk. And then the next thing I knew, somebody handed me a book, Autobiography of a Yogi, and I started reading, a few of the books that were out about people's experiences in India. But when a friend gave me Autobiography of a Yogi, and I was 19, I think, I recognized Yogananda, who is the author, right away, and I just read the book avidly, and then that began my spiritual path. It was like, whatever he's got, that's what I want. I want to learn meditation.
Yeah, he's and very so famous. Just, yeah, exactly. Now, have you ever been to Tibet?
To where? Tibet.
Tibet.
In this life, I have not been to Tibet, not physically. I've been to India many times, and I've been close to Tibet. I've gone high up in the Himalayas. I've been as far as, like, the last village in India, right at the border of Tibet.
Wow.
And I'm flirting with the idea, but it's not easy to go to Tibet. You know, you need special permission. You need to go into China. And so it's
I didn't even know that. It's a real ordeal if you have to go through into China. Yeah, I guess you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I'm looking at,
you have to get permission. Yeah, you have to get permission to go.
Wow,
so
I didn't know that at all.
I mean, a part of me would love to go, but another part of me feels, well, I've already seen Tibet in its beauty, and it would be very sad for me to see what's happened to it. So,
you know, I've heard that before from people, that sometimes it's just better to look at pictures of now than to actually go there, because things have changed so drastically. I mean, all the countries have changed. And look at the United States,
know.
And so sometimes that would make you sad, because you want to – I mean, I have my own idea. You know, I see these big, huge I don't know what they look like. But they're kind of like – it's not like – not Japanese looking, but, you know, they're real tall and they're kind of golden and they have these rounded domes. And because if you watch some movies – even though they're not, they don't film there, they have the sets that look like it, you can get an idea of what it would look like. And it's fascinating. I mean, but to step on the ground would be really, really nice. The place I want to go to is Israel. The reason being,
the reason being is
because I feel I was with Jesus when he was on the cross. And I had a man from there on my show, and we started talking, you know, and he said, well, tell me about it. I said, well, Jesus has visited me twice in this lifetime. I have seen him.
Yeah.
And under unusual, well, one time I really needed his help, and then just another time I was in a vehicle, and he was standing there and didn't say anything, but he realized that I didn't believe who it was. I mean, I could see who it was, but I thought, oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And then what he did is he looked down past my vehicle, and here comes all the apostles. Then he looked back, and he said this mentally, now do you believe me? And then the other time was when my husband, who had Alzheimer's, I kept him home. That's a big story. But I locked myself in the bathroom, and I'm sitting on the floor sobbing, Dina. And I looked down, and I saw a pair of feet, and I saw part of a robe, bottom of a robe. Mm-hmm. And instantly, I knew it was Jesus. And so I stood up, I unlocked the door, and I didn't cry anymore like that. I mean, I was sobbing because I had been through, unless you are around somebody who's very mean, when they have Alzheimer's, they can really be very physical, and I feared for my life every moment of every day. So I was near the end of where you're kind of like, how much more do I have to do? How much, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's why
yeah,
I want to
yeah.
go there. And he told me, he said, I'm going to tell you something. If you could ever come here and I'm with you, I'm going to take you there. I'm going to take you exactly where it was. And he said, you can bet people are going to recognize you. I said, why? He said, I recognize you on the phone. I know what you are. And I said, well, it made me feel so good, you know, but I don't know that I'll ever get there. I mean, it's so costly to go over to another country, you know. But
the flight is so costly, yeah.
Well, yeah. And then your stay, right? Okay, so let's get back to you. So you got your master's degree from Columbia, and you've been on many boards.
Yes.
And then you won a Peace Prize for your interfaith peace efforts. My goodness, look at these honors you've had. What does it take to? I mean, I'm not honored for anything, but that doesn't mean I'm not anything. But you know what I'm saying? You have to be. I don't know if it's not even a certain level, but you have to be in a certain place where, or it's this lifetime you're supposed to be recognized. Maybe that's what it is. I mean, I don't usually question it. Go ahead.
To me, I see it as a culmination of many lifetimes of work. And one of the things that I did when I sort of found myself in the interfaith movement, I sort of was an unwilling servant there. I mean, I didn't intend to get involved in interfaith, but it just so happened that I sort of backed into it, and I found that there were no women leaders in the interfaith movement, and it was very much exclusively an Abrahamic dialogue with very little representation from Asia. So I thought, well, this is unbalanced. So I
very
made
much
it
so.
My business. I made
Where
my
are
business.
All the women it's, behind me? Let's go.
I made it my business to bring in the women. And sometimes I'd be so often invited to speak on a panel as the only woman because they needed somebody, and here I was. So they'd invite me to speak on a panel, and I'd say, well, I'm representing half the human race here. But that changed,
I guess so.
You know, has changed. Over 25 years, I just felt that I didn't need to do that anymore because it's changed. You know, there are many women leading into faith. You know, initially, when this whole issue came up of women, it was like, oh, yeah, we'll set up a women's program. You know, and no. Women have to lead the interfaith organizations and, you know, shape the dialogue, not just have a separate women's, you know, like they have church has to have women's groups. That's not what I was looking for, women's groups.
Exactly. So, and I bet you, when you did things like that, you were so comfortable because you probably carried it from another lifetime. So, you know, I think... And sometimes I wonder, you know, I think you know what you were, but for me, I mean, this gentleman says he knows, but I don't ever see myself, I see myself walking the path to help Jesus. I really see that, but anything else, I really don't. And I think it's just how we evolve, you know, and... somebody said that I've done all my stuff that I have to do, and so this is why I'm going to start to cultivate everything. Everything is going to come to me now because I've done all the work. I mean, I'm all past that, you know. But I wonder sometimes. I've never had a past life regression. I've never had anybody talk to me about that. I don't know. I had to have been very spiritual because I'm just so drawn to everything. And that's what I do. I don't have, even on my radio show, everybody is walking the spiritual path of some sort. They're doing something. And they come to me. I don't go after them. So I guess that's my calling, right, just to bring all the beautiful people
yeah.
like yourself to everybody so that they can hear about you and hear about your books and, my God, the books you've written. I only have one on my show page here, and that's this last one that you did in 2023. But I have some questions that I want to. Okay, what are the elements in past lives that affect who you are today? And that could be for anybody, I think. What are the elements? What do you think it's?
I think
it is
for everybody, and that's... I don't encourage people to do past life regression because I feel anything that you need to know will come organically. And, I mean, it's something, it has to be your own realization, not somebody telling you, oh, you were this, that, or that. Because it's not important who you were. It's really, it's about spiritual growth. And what you take with you, I mean, I think that we're in our current situation, we're the culmination of all that we've been. And what we take with us are the relationships. So if we have love relationships, those are eternal. If we have troubled relationships, we have to work them out. So if something is unresolved, it comes back to us because we need to resolve it.
Yeah.
All the
oh, no, I believe that too. I believe that too because and sometimes you'll meet people and it's not kind of like they're very familiar, but you see, I don't meet that many new people except for on the radio or via email. So I'm kind of excluded from all of that. I don't really know why. I love people. I love helping people. I am of service all the time, and I have been when I look back as a little girl. I mean, I saved a couple of lives. I mean, and I continue to do that throughout my life so far. So, and that's when I have my little talks every day with God and whatever you believe in. I tell him or her, whatever you choose, that I will be of service. That's it. I am of service, and that's it. So just give me what you want me to do, and that's what happens. And so I don't know. It's really strange, though, I think, that sometimes we don't know where we're going, where we've been, and all that kind of stuff. But I think if you just take one step at a time and have a strong belief, like I do, it'll be okay. I'm not, you know, don't make a big deal out of things in your life. But that's easy to say. That is so easy to say. I know that people are probably saying,
well,
oh, yeah, sure, Natalie.
I think self-reflection is important, to sort of look at the things in your life so that you can take advantage of what's been offered and you can make progress. If, you know, if, as I said, if there's a troubled relationship, you can work on it, you know, not just accept, you know, I just don't get along with that person. But you can, you, especially if it's a family member, then somebody you're going to have to deal with. And so you can work on it or know that you'll have to work on it in the future. If you have habits that are not healthy, rather than just accept them, if you self-reflect, you know what you have to work on. And then if you have habits that are helpful, that's great. Then you can just strengthen those habits. So I think self-reflection is an important part of the spiritual path, to look at your life, you know, objectively, and so that you can guide your direction, really.
Yeah, and like, you know, and sometimes, you know, and I myself, I can use myself as an example. What I had to deal with was not fun. And many people go through things like this. You're not exempt from everything. I mean, everybody's faced with something, you know. But I know it stays with you. Not every day, not every moment of the day. But for me, I probably had post-traumatic stress. I'm almost certain of it because I was under the gun every day, every single day. And I look at myself sometime and I'll say to the mirror, in the mirror, it's amazing that you're still here. Because there were times, yeah, there were times. But I also know there's a reason that I'm still here. So, and that's fine with me. Whatever the reason is, I'll take it. I love it. I'll work with it. I'll be of service and guide it and help it along and all of that, which I do now because sometimes, you know, I become a workaholic. Like I do things like nonstop, and then I wear myself to a frazzle. And so, hold on. Oh, somebody's at my door, and I don't know why. Hold on. Just, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Okay.
Hey.
How's it going?
Okay.
So I have a dead pine tree in my front yard that has to be removed. They're here now to do it, but they need my driveway clear.
That's
if I leave my Jeep?
No. It's costing a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, like $2,000.
Oh, that's why I don't get mine removed. You got permission from the city, right?
Yeah, well, I have to.
Yeah.
They told me that I have to do it because it's dead.
Okay. No, you can park there. That's great. Thank you. Sorry, Dina, I had to answer that. It's my next-door neighbor, and I've got this tree-cutting service in front of my house. What are they going to do, cut my trees down? Yeah, $2,000 to remove a tree. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Well, where I am, there's big, huge pine trees, you know, and but you have to get permission to remove it. You can't just say, well, I'm taking this one down and this one down. They won't let you do that here because we are in the wetlands, and they won't allow it. But anyways, back to you. So I think... I think you need to reflect and not question what you're doing and your purpose. Like I really know, but sometimes it's difficult for me. And I'm really grateful for that I'm surrounded by so many people, even if it's just, you know, on WhatsApp or on the phone, or because I really don't mingle with people that much. And when you get older, you're not older. You're going to see that's going to happen. It happens to everybody. And I don't know why. I don't know why people get this. You know, in some countries, older people are revered.
In Asia, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
You know, and I think to myself, why can't I be revered? You know, because I feel neglected a lot. And so I'm just really happy that I can talk to beautiful people like yourself and get inspired, and I have my work, you know, that I do. That's important to me. I don't really know what I would be doing. Probably I would be cuckoo. Plus, I think that I have served a purpose. There's a reason. And continue with my radio show. Now, my radio show is 12 years old, 13 years old. I take it back, 13 years old.
Hmm. Well, you know, one of the weaknesses of our culture is this lack of respect for elders. It exists in all the ancient cultures. It's very deep in Asia, all of Asian, even the Middle. I mean, almost everywhere. It's the worst here. I've done a lot of dialogues with young people because we focus on youth leadership. And everywhere except America, I have found the young people so eager for mentorship with those who have, you know, more life experience. In America, I found they just are not interested. It's like we don't they don't value the experience.
Yeah, and you know what?
Bring.
I wonder if
it.
It's because here in the United States, it's all about how you look. How you look.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Her skin's got wrinkles. But in other countries, I mean, elderly, I'm not that old, but the elderly with, you know, all their wrinkles, that's wisdom. To other countries, that means wisdom.
It's life experience.
You know, they've been here
experience.
A while. Yeah. I call it floor experience. They have a lot of experience. You want to know something? Go talk to that lady or that man over there. And I think the culture that's here in the United States has gone to how we look. That's it.
It's absolutely true. It's been very much
and it's really sad, isn't it?
It's
just so
sad.
And I don't know if it's ever going to change. I'm not in my lifetime, I'm sure.
I think it will be forced to change because we're an aging population. You know, so.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true. We are. Yes. Yes, there's so many more, I don't know what the percentage is of seniors and those on Social Security. But even those people are having to work some. They're part-time to supplement because they don't have enough. They can't, you know, they just
exactly.
can't survive.
Yeah.
But I just wish elderly people were treated with so much respect. And just a human being, just a human, because there are so many that are suffering needlessly and don't get the help. I help everybody. I don't care who they are. It doesn't matter to me. You can be young. You can be really old. It doesn't matter. That's how I am. I've always been like that.
It should be really the happiest time of life, actually, because you fulfilled a lot of your responsibilities. You have a lot of freedom, actually, time, and you can pursue your spiritual interests. So it should be a very rewarding time of life. And for many people, it is, I think.
The only thing I miss is, because I'm a people person, is, you know, I worked in a nursing home. I did hair back in Michigan, originally from Michigan. I worked at a huge tennis club. That's my background. I loved working with people. So here I am thrown into, not really solitude, but, you know, I'm alone. And, I mean, I have family that live 10 minutes away, but I rarely see them. Their life is so busy, and that really bothers me, you know. And if you think back, and I know people are going to be listening and thinking, when I was even first married, we went to my mother-in-law's and my mother and father's every single Sunday. We didn't miss a beat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we had family
yeah.
dinners. My mother-in-law would cook for four of her kids and all the whole family. And we were all we were laughing and you know, joking. And it was an Italian family, so it was very big. And people would walk in because it'd be a Sunday. It was the best thing to look forward to, was seeing everybody. Now everybody is just working two and three jobs,
and
I miss
far
that.
Away.
Live far away. Yeah, and I have a granddaughter, but she's in school right. You know, she goes to school. She goes to SCAB, and she's going in like sometimes six days a week because she's got her projects that she's doing, and she has to get them done. And normally they go 4 days a week. I haven't seen her since January, and she's 10 minutes down the road. I understand it. You know, I really understand that. I might not like it, but I understand it. So if anybody's listening and you have, you know, parents or grandparents, don't push them aside. Just appreciate them and spend time with them. Little things mean a lot. So, you know, she's off today, so hopefully I'll get to see her a little bit because she's got a week break, and we already talked about it. But it's just so difficult, and you don't want to press people. Like, people have their own lives. I've never seen so many people so busy, and how do we change that? How do they go back a little bit to understanding family is so important? It really, really is. You know what I always say to my son? I have only one child. you know, you know, it's an Italian thing. You call your mother every day. And he does, sometimes several times. But I'll say to him, you know, you don't want to hate yourself when I'm gone. You have to always do most you can. And he does, and he does. I have no complaints about him. But I see it happen all the time, and I think to myself, you know what? And it's not even karma. It's you're going to think back and say, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I do that? Well, you could have, but you didn't take the time. So listeners out there, take the time to spend it with people and appreciate them and learn from them. I want to talk about your latest book here. This, how do you pronounce that? Is it Dakinis? Dakinis?
Dakinis.
Okay.
Dakinis.
All right, that
like
makes so much sense. To Dakinis, right?
Yeah.
Like a bikini, only a Dakinis.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
to dance with.
A Dakini is like you might call it angelic, a female angelic figure. So it's
okay.
a female being from a higher realm. Who
I like,
you know,
this already.
Yeah, who comes to Earth to you know, just to experience what it's like here, and sometimes they'll take a you know, human body, but they're basically a female form from another realm, from a higher realm.
Oh, this is right up my alley. This is up my alley.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna call Sarah. I need this book, Sarah. Usually she sends them to me anyways when I have a guest on. But okay, so it's an angelic comes down and so why did you write this book?
So the story that the phrase comes from, there are many, many stories in the book. It happens toward, I'd say, three quarters of the way through the book when you hear that story of why it's called that. So you don't know what the name means until you get pretty much through the book. But, you know, I talk about in the introduction how I've had many memories of my past births, many, many memories, and I've written other books about them. And each time I finish a book, I don't know if anything more will come, you know. I think, well, maybe this is the last book. And then something happens where I have another recall. And this one came about to my grandson, actually, when he was a little boy. He was talking a lot about Tibet. He just knew so much about Tibet. And
You're kidding!
He was very, oh, yeah. He was three or four, and he started talking about Tibet. And I talk about that a lot in the introduction. And then there was, you know, I mean, I had a vision of him before he was even born. I had a deep connection with this being. There was no question about that. And it was reaffirmed as he grew up. Now he's 15, and we're still very, very, like, best friends. I have many grandchildren, but he's the one that I have this relationship with. And he's got a strong connection with Tibet, a very strong connection. So as over the years, as he would talk about Tibet, my own memories emerged. And that's why I began to write the book, of a life in Tibet in the 12th century, where I knew my grandson as my son. He was my son at that time. And then I recount three lives, actually. It begins in Tibet, and then this woman named Padma recalls her birth just previous, which was in medieval France, which explains certain things that were happening to her in her life. She was having difficulties and she couldn't make her way through until she could see her previous birth and understand why this certain person was pursuing her. And then she she makes sense of it and she resolves her problem. But one of the relationships remains unresolved and she has to be born again. She's born in India. And this unresolved relationship gets resolved. So it basically follows a woman through three lifetimes. And you see how things that are not resolved get resolved at a future time.
I mean, I'm in awe because I don't want to say I'm not intelligent, but I think there's different kinds of intelligence. I don't think you can base it upon, well, I know algebra, I know math, and I know English, but no, I don't know. That's not me. Mine is something else. But But to get all of this information and to write about it, I'm in just total awe of you. I mean, I'm looking at all the books you've written here. I mean, I've got a whole list of them. Was this Untold Story of Sita? Is that what it's called, or is it Sita?
Sita, The Untold Story of
Sita,
yeah.
Was that the first book you wrote?
The first book I wrote was My Journey Through Time, and it's when it explains how I first began to have past life recall. When I was in my early 40s, I met a person who just began to awaken the life of my previous birth, which was in Russia at the turn of the last century, and how I had to flee during the revolution and ended up in Europe and then died during the war. And so it was just previous to this birth. And then I go back further to the life just before that. And it was things that happened to me. You know, I would meet somebody or go someplace, and that would be like a trigger to set off these memories. So that's my first book, My Journey Through Time. And then Sita was my second book.
Yeah, I can see them all now, the dates that you had. Yeah, one, Journey Through Time was 2018. Then you did another one in 2019. That was the Untold Story of Sita. Then you did another one. I mean, my God, you're amazing. How do you write all these things? I mean, I have a fairy tale in my head, and I can't say I can. You have to take that word from your vocabulary, I can, because you can.
Right.
It's just sometimes it's not at that moment in time you're supposed to do it. There'll be a time. But I'm amazed at how you could write about another place like that from another lifetime. I have no idea what I did before. Nothing.
I'm a writer, so I love to write, and I have made this my main occupation now since COVID, really, where I used to, you know, travel around a lot doing work for this foundation, the Global Peace Initiative of Women, and I stopped doing that and I began to write. I thought that at this stage in my life, if I can share with others, and I'm particularly interested in how this law of cause and effect work. In other words, conditions of our life, how do we understand the conditions that we have? We can't blame anybody else. We can't say that somebody up there who dictated to us. We created our conditions sometime in the past that we don't remember. But if we, first of all, know that we created it, you know, and that there's a reason and there's a learning, and if our past created our present, then we are now creating our future. You know, there's a future for all of us. I mean, there's no ending to our life. We're eternal beings. And it's a matter of how you identify, whether you identify with your deeper self or with your more external personality.
I guess, but maybe, and I'm asking you, I guess, is maybe I'm not supposed to remember a past life. Maybe there's no need to remember.
I think that's the case for a lot of people, that if it would be distracting if you got caught up. I mean, the first time I had these past life recalls, I talk about this in the book, My Journey. It was destabilizing, you know. It was very hard to function. I was functioning in two time frames. And I was a single mom raising two teenage sons, and it was very difficult. Over time, I've learned how to manage it. And so, but, you know, I also live alone, and as a writer, I need that time alone because I really disappear into the past. I mean, when I was writing this book, To Dance with Bikinis, I was living in 12th century Tibet. I relived that whole experience. And so I needed that time alone to spend as much time as I could to recount what I was experiencing, you know. And I my goal is in sharing these experiences that maybe it will help other people see their life differently, to understand things about their life in a new way. That's my goal. Otherwise, I could just have these experiences and not share them, you know.
Okay. Well, I'm getting something while I'm talking to you. I have this, I have all these animals that come to me. I have a herd of deer at night. I have mallards and their babies. I have seven squirrels. I have woodpeckers. I have four cardinals that come beautiful males, big, you know, they're red, you know, the beautiful red, and mourning doves. And sometimes I look out my window and, you know, I'll question, you know, well, why am I by myself? You know, and then I'll be reminded when I look outside and sit outside, which I'll do again when I'm done with the show, is that this is what it is for you. You have been given this ability to attract all of these different types of beings, little beings. I call it my animal kingdom, that come to me without reservation. I mean, I have this one deer that stands on my porch and looks at my door wall, and I call her Jezebel. I always name them. She's Jezebel because she's fearless. And you know, I look out, and my son says to me, "Mom, you know, they can fend for themselves." And I look at him, I said, "No." He said, "What do you mean, no?" It's because that's my job. I'm supposed to help take care of them. And I talk to them real light. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feed them. Oh, sure. And I, you know, I get close to them. Last night I was really close to them. I'm careful because they're still animals and they're big. I mean, they're a lot bigger than I am.
Yeah.
But they recognize me because deer don't usually wag their tails, and they wag their tails. They know, you know, they know. And they're waiting in the dark for me. I only feed them at night because I don't want anybody to harm them. And when it's like hunting season, okay, I always have this little chat with them, and I tell them to go back in the woods from where you came. Don't go in the road, okay, because you could get hurt.
Mm.
And they, you know, I don't see them when they leave because I have three huge bowls that I feed all kinds of stuff, corn and these special pellets for deer. And I, listen to this, I give them apples and carrots. I don't peel the apples, but I cut them up. And my son says to me, "Mother, you don't have to cut them up." Yes, I do. But he said, "Why?" I said, "Because I do." You know, so maybe that's what I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing, okay?
Yeah.
You know, I thought about doing some kind of part-time. I'm a bookkeeper. I can do that too. I thought about doing that, and I thought, no, I don't want to do that. I really love what I'm doing. I really do. I just don't get out as much. And but you know, maybe it's a time when I'm not supposed to. I guess that's how I look at it. Well, you're not supposed to.
Yeah, that's
right. You know. Yeah, there's a reason, because you think, what would you be doing? You know, walking around in Target or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Well, what would you really be doing? It wouldn't be purposeful. So what I'm doing here in this house is purposeful. There's a reason for it and a purpose. So, you know, but I'm just in awe of you, Dina, because of all these beautiful books and this last one, those colors do something to me. They make me feel so good. And I'm drawn to those colors.
A painting. We found a painting. A lot of my covers are paintings. Paintings that I've commissioned.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. But still, you know, I'm going to even change my one site as soon as possible to more of the light colors, because this girl that does work for me, she's in the UK, and she said, "I don't think you know what you are." I said, "What am I?" She said, "You're an angel." She said, "You, that site is you." And she said, "And you are so..." I mean, I love the turquoise. I love like the mist of the white. That's why I'm drawn to your book cover so much, I think. And my site will be similar, not as in depth. In other words, it won't be solid, you know. But talking to you, it makes me feel really good because I know I'm doing the right thing. I'm not, I do talk to God every day, and I'll say, you know, what else can I do? You know, you just point the way, open the door. I'll walk through it. If it's not good, I'll slam the door. I won't continue on. But, you know, but how is it that some people, they seem to be mostly of service, and they don't seem to, and I guess you could compare it to people that have a lot of money, which I'm not a pauper, But, you know, sometimes I hurt a little bit and I could use more, but still, you know, there's still this part of me that says you've just got to keep being of service. This is your job. People look to you for that. Well, I am of service to all these little beings that come to see me. I am.
Well, that's
and,
beautiful because actually what the animals need right now is to feel human love. We've so abused the plant and animal kingdoms that they need to feel
yeah,
human love.
Yeah, and so they found the haven with me, their own little area, but I'm real careful with them, especially the deer. But the mallards, the moms will come, then they lay their eggs, and they bring their babies about, it's been 3 years and I've been doing it, about 2 weeks later, and it's the cutest thing, you're all in a line. One mother's in the front,
oh,
and one's
so
in the back. Oh, I had 25 of them last spring and summer, and I feed them. And I put fresh water out for them. I'm in front of a lagoon, or the lagoon is behind me. I mean, it's a man-made thing. I don't live in this posh neighborhood. But my son says to me again, Mom, they have water. I said, they don't have fresh water. I'm giving them fresh water, you know, in a container. And it's funny, you watch them, and they step in it, and then they step out, and they drink it. They're the most... I'm in my own little heaven when I'm taking care of all of them. I really, really am. So I guess that's my
calling.
You're
not alone.
My son said, yeah, you're going to open the door well, and one of them's going to walk in the kitchen. I said, no, I don't think so. But if I could see them all day, I really should have been on a farm or in an area where I could walk and see all kinds of wildlife. I probably would have been super happy, but I guess this is the best that I could have right now. And
it was so nice during COVID when the animals began to come back.
Yes.
You know, because human activity slowed. Yeah. That was
It really, really is. And you see them looking in your door, in my door wall, these beautiful faces. I mean, I can't even explain to people how it makes me feel. It's like heaven on earth. It really is for me. It's just,
yeah.
I'm not, and I, you know, I keep saying I'm going to do it until I'm not on earth, and then I'll probably figure out a way when I'm not on earth to do it anyhow, you know. But
well, there'll be other things to do.
yeah, but we don't, you know, right now this is my calling. Right now this is all my calling, what I'm doing. And so, okay, so now I have to ask you this, because this book came out last year. Do you have another book in the works? I bet you do.
I do.
I know. Once a writer, always a writer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the book
because
is about the future.
Good. Oh, good. We need that. We really need that. Now, how long did it take you to write this last book?
About a year. I think most of my books take me about a year. This new book that I'm working on, I'm about halfway through. It's more difficult because it's the future, not the past. I've written a lot about the past. And this is, this is 200 years in the future.
So
what
do you do it
like
on Word, on your computer, or do you handwrite it, or what?
No, I write on my computer in Word.
Okay, yeah, good old Word, right? Well, it'll tell you when you misspell, too. Tells you everything.
Yeah, no.
I use Word
it's
a lot
Word.
When to send stuff to my gal in the UK for the flip, and I didn't use it a lot before. And I'm finding, because I have Outlook 365, and I'm finding things that, wow, look at this. Like, oh, I made a mistake. I typed this wrong, you know. But it's a great tool to have. And I think, I have talked to some authors that said, oh, no, I longhand it. How could you do that? I mean, my mind would go too fast.
I don't know.
I could not keep up with it. I could never keep up with it.
I mean, in the olden days, you had to. I mean, you know, I remember in college using a typewriter with all the whiteout. But, I mean, with computers today, why would you not use them? I don't know. I can't imagine why you would not.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it's funny. I have one author who will – I can tell he's typed it because now he's in the UK, but he just seems to be older. Maybe it's just what I'm getting. But he'll do, like, after a word, he'll do a space, and then he puts a comma. You see how he types? He does it every single time. And I'm thinking either he's on an older typewriter. He's not. I don't think he's doing it on a computer. I really don't. I think he's actually doing it on a computer. Or he could be. And this is a habit he got into. So I have to go through it because I'm always looking, and I have to put the comma after the word. Or he'll do other little things. For an indent on the paragraph, he does one space in, or he... Yeah, one space in, and you know it's the beginning of the paragraph. He just doesn't do, like, five or six indents, like you're taught when you learn how to type. He just and so, and I laugh at myself, and I say, Natalie, that's because you're the typist and he's not. He's the writer and you're the typee. But it keeps me on my toes. It really, really does. Now, I have some other questions about Tibet here. Actually, these came from a gal that does a lot of my content for me. She wants to know, what do you think about the current situation in Tibet?
Well, I think the current situation will change. Everything is changing all the time. I mean, I think there will come a time when Tibet will be autonomous again. When that is, it's hard to say. I mean, we're going through a lot of transitions in the world right now. I think we're going to see a lot of changes in the next few decades. You have to take a long view, you know. I mean, so many empires have broken up. I mean, all the old empires have broken up. Empires don't last forever. And so, you know, Tibet, the timing of that is hard to determine, but I think looking ahead to the decades, it will be a different situation. And there's probably something Tibet will have gained through this experience.
When you think about it, their culture is the word that comes to me is calm, C-A-L-M, calm. And I don't know if that's because of the years past, but they just, and you can look at one, and they just give off that they're calm. That is it really like that? Well, you don't know. You've not been there, but you certainly studied a lot about it. You know a lot about it.
Well, I think that's part of the Buddhist training. I mean, you look at the Dalai Lama. I mean, he's been through some, you know, horrible things in his life, and yet he's not an angry man. He's not advocating violence.
Very calm.
He's a peaceful man advocating compassion and loving kindness.
Yeah.
So it shows me that no matter what you've gone through, you can maintain your humanity. You know, you don't have to become bitter and angry.
Maybe I was in Tibet in a previous lifetime because I really rarely, I really don't get upset. I don't, I'm usually very, very calm. I mean, you know, if something happens, well, I fix it. I'm a fixer, too. I like to fix things. I like to make it better. So I don't know. I would be curious to wonder what I was, but I guess it doesn't matter. If you don't know what you were, you don't have to worry about it because you're here now and you're doing the job you're doing, and it doesn't matter what you are. I guess happiness is so important, and so many people are not happy, and some of it is because all they think about is money. That's their driving force. Money, 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 money. Oh, how much am I doing? How much am I making? And blah, blah, blah. I don't think that way. And you probably don't either. You're just very calming. You know, I mean, okay, I made this much, okay. But it doesn't, you don't dwell upon it constantly all day long. And there are people that are like that. And so that we solved a lot of things in the world, okay? You got to stop worrying about how you look. And you need to have greater respect for your elders and treat them like they're sitting on a throne, all of them. I mean, you know, all the wisdom. Sometimes I think about, well, my one grandfather I never met, but my other grandfather, I was afraid of him when I was a little girl, and I really wish I would have come to know him when I was a little bit older. I probably would have appreciated him more. And he used to read the Bible every day.
Oh.
Every day. Yeah, every day. Yeah, wow, he's right, you know. But he was a very, he wasn't scary to me. And I was really little, like maybe 4 or 5 years old. And he was very quiet, a very humble, quiet man. Sometimes mm-hmm. I wondered about him. And he never raised his voice. Maybe that came from reading the Bible. It really helped him in his life, I think. You know, it had to be. I mean, I've had people give me Bibles. Some of them, I have started some of them. And how about, there's other things that you can read that are like a Bible to you, too, you know. But I do respect the people in Tibet and the shamans. I've had a few shamans on my show. I had one that spent time, and he explained to me what it was like for him. You know, they didn't talk. He said to me it was very humbling, but he came out of it such a strong person, he said. And I remember that talk I had with him. I was like, oh, my God, you did this? Yeah, we didn't talk to anybody. No, you don't talk. You just, it's a different kind of life. But I don't know. What's going on with them now? I mean, do they still have a lot of monasteries and all that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, a lot of the Tibetans have fled, and their whole communities that live in India, actually.
Yeah.
Because the Chinese just regulate everything, you know. I mean, they regulate the monasteries. They regulate the life. I mean, they move people out of the countryside into settlements. They've brought in a lot of Chinese people to settle there. So they've diluted the Tibetan influence. So it's but nothing is permanent. That could all change. It could all change. And so, you know, we just have to, you know, it's like everything is connected. So the more we try to raise the vibration of the planet and focus on the good and
that's the key word, vibration. Raise the vibration.
Yeah.
That's the key word right there, Dina.
Yeah,
you got
it.
You hit right on it.
Everything
true.
Will change. That's the best we can do for the planet is to raise the vibration. Then things will change very quickly.
I want to remind people of your website, and I'm going to spell it out. It's DenaMerriam.com. And you're going to see her in this beautiful – you still have that color hair?
I still do. Yep, I still do.
Well, she is
a
little, a little reddish, blondish, beautiful, and she's got this beautiful orange, not really a true orange, a shade of orange around her, and she just you just look magnificent. You really do. You're very pretty. You're very spiritual looking. Well, no, it's true. I don't lie. I mean, I wouldn't tell you were ugly, but I would. You know, you're just a mess. No, no. I am complimentary, but no. That's a perfect color for you that you have on your site.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So she's got this book out, this To Dance With, Tikini,
In
Search of Self.
Right.
And it's the most beautiful colored book I've seen. I mean, and I always compliment. Tell me about the cover. Is the cover soft? Has it got a feel to it?
It does. It's soft. It's a painting that we commissioned by an American artist, and it's just like it looks. You know, beautiful greenish color.
Yeah.
There's dancing celestial figures, female figures who are dancing on a lake, and there's a story in there toward the end of the book about that. About a child who wants to dance with the bikinis, but she can't because she's a human child, and she can't dance on the lake. But she wants to be like them.
Well, you want, I shouldn't say the name of my book. I guess I should do a copyright on it. It's called To Dance on the Waters, which you can't dance on the waters. Yeah, but it's a fairy tale.
No, not in our human bodies. Yeah.
Huh?
Not in our human bodies.
Yeah, To Dance on the Waters, about a couple that find each other from previous lifetimes, and they've been searching and searching, And I've already got the story in my head. I could just do it, you know. And the funny thing is that I have so many publishing houses that I can contact, so many publicists, so many doors that could possibly open for me. But you know what? I think timing is everything, too, Dina. I think we do things at certain times in our life, and we're prompted. Like your first book, did you ever think you were going to write a book at all before you wrote your first one?
No. No.
Okay.
No,
what prompted you? What was it at that time? Were you in a certain state of mind? What happened?
I was having these experiences, and I really wrote it down for myself, just to really see whether it all made sense. I really was writing it for myself. And then a friend of mine insisted on reading it. She had just gotten diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and it helped her tremendously. And she said to me, "Do you have to publish this?" Because she was facing death. She died. And this gave her a lot of comfort to know that it's not the end, you know, the story goes on. And, I felt, you know, she's not gone. She's just in a different dimension. I have felt her presence, and I think she's getting ready to take birth again. She didn't finish what she wanted to do. So she'll come back and continue on.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. But it's hard when you're living the life. You don't want to leave what you've got, like, right now, and the people that are around you, and... You know what
I'm
saying?
We get identified and attached to them, and it is helpful to know that you don't leave anybody. I mean, my father passed away 2 years ago. I feel his presence continually. I don't feel he's gone. You know?
I have some people around me, a lady who was like a sister to me. We used to host, she used to help me host the shows. But she died suddenly, but we became like sisters, you know, and then my best friend, and then my parents died less than 5 months apart of each other. But there is a unique story. My father just didn't want to live without my mother. I mean, he didn't hurt himself, but he did it. He did himself in. He knew. And you just couldn't live without her. And then, of course, my husband had Alzheimer's, really the nasty kind. But that's been 12 years ago, but I still feel him. I know he's proud of me, you know, for all that I've done and accomplished. And, you know, and I almost died myself when I was 32. So I guess, you know, we just have to know that if we're still here, there's still more for us to do. It's not time
That's
to move
right.
to something else. So you have
That's
to keep
right.
continue on with the work that you're doing. And,
yes.
You and that's the truth. And not worry about what you can't do. And I didn't
that's
finish
right.
that. Well, there's still tomorrow for you. You can still do that. So that's
yeah.
that's what it's all about. But anyways, I've enjoyed my talk with you so much.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you.
Yeah, and next book coming out. If Sarah's your publicist, I'm going to go back. We're going to have you back on again because you are a delight. You just really are. And I am in
Thank
awe
you.
Of you. I'm in awe of you.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted.
I will,
right.
And you have an awesome day. And everybody, I'll be on next week, of course. I missed a few weeks. Some of my authors got sick and all that kind of thing, but I'm booked up now through April. So you'll be hearing from me a lot. And as I always, and you're going to love this, Dina, as I always end the show, that is, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And with that, I'll say goodbye. And know that you're all loved
Bye.
Very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.